Europe comes together, kind of.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM, American Public Media in New York, good morning. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, in for Jeremy Hobson. European Union leaders have been in an emergency meeting in Brussels today, trying to get the 27 EU member states to agree to a plan to bolster the euro and save the eurozone economy. 23 countries did agree to a new treaty, but the UK would not. Here to explain is our own Stephen Beard from Brussels. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Stacey.
So, Stephen, what's happened? What have European leaders agreed to, and what is the problem?
Well, it's probably easier to say what they haven't agreed to. They failed to agree a new EU-wide treaty with new rules forcing the 27 EU member countries to keep their public spending under control and punishing those countries that run up big deficits. Most of them have agreed to this so-called fiscal union. 23 of them, including the 17 that use the euro, are signing up to it, but another two are undecided, and crucially, Britain and Hungary have said no.
So they got almost all of the countries to agree. Can two countries really stop an agreement like that?
Well, this is where it gets complicated and potentially very messy. What the 23 countries that want this fiscal union have to do is sign a new treaty between themselves. But, and this is pretty critical, Britain argues they cannot then use all the powerful machinery of the EU, the Commission and the Court, to police and enforce that new fiscal union. Here's the British Prime Minister David Cameron speaking here in Brussels a few hours ago.
We will insist that the EU institutions, the Court, the Commission, that they work for all 27 nations of the European Union. Indeed, those institutions are established by the treaty, and that treaty is still protected.
So if Cameron's right, the new treaty cannot be policed and enforced by the Commission and the Court, making it a rather toothless agreement.
Our own Stephen Beard in Brussels. Thank you, Stephen.
Okay, Stacey.
That news from Brussels has the markets mixed this morning. European markets are feeling optimistic. London's FTSE is up 0.1%. Asian markets were mostly down. Toyota cut its profit forecast by more than half, partly because floods in Thailand disrupted production. U.S. markets had a bloody day yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 1.2%, closing at 11,997. The situation in Europe that's been rattling the markets all week has sparked speculation that Europe is headed toward an economic crisis like the one we had in 2008. David Blanchflower is an economist at Dartmouth. He was with the Bank of England when the financial crisis hit. And in a recent op-ed in The Guardian, he said the eurozone remains divided at its peril. He joins us now. Good morning, David.
Hello.
David, when the last economic crisis hit in 2008, you were part of the decision-making team at the Bank of England. Did that crisis and the actions that you took then, could that potentially provide a script for how the European Central Bank should act in this current crisis?
Well, I certainly think there is a great feeling of similarity right now to what happened, especially in October 2008, with central banks acting together as they did last week. And my worry is, just as as happened in 2008, it was because they'd seen things that everybody else hadn't seen, and things were much worse than actually most people knew. And it presages something really terrible happening, which was a big drop in output and a huge increase in unemployment. And it was particularly driven by a global banking crisis. And here we go again.
And you mentioned this in your op-ed as well, but it sounds like you think this situation is also maybe worse than we know.
Well, I certainly think what it tends to say to you is central banks acting together is a really difficult thing to do. You have to get 50 or 60 people to agree together to all of the wording and to act together. And that takes some time. And it probably means that they've seen something pretty awful that they have to respond to. So I take it to mean that actually they've probably seen something, perhaps a European bank that's come and not been able to make a payment and has had to be rescued secretly, as happened in October 2008.
David Blanchflower is a professor of economics at Dartmouth and an ex-member of the Bank of England. David, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mom.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
Republicans in the Senate have blocked the nomination of Richard Cordray, President Obama's pick to head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. That's the latest setback for the Dodd-Frank financial reform law. Now, President Obama says he's considering a recess appointment. From Washington, Marketplace's David Gura reports.
The Bureau is supposed to oversee mortgage brokers, payday lenders, student loan lenders.
Without a director, they're unable to regulate and oversee those type of businesses.
That's lawyer Fred Rivera with Perkins Coie. He says right now the Bureau has limited oversight, and that bothers President Obama.
I will not take any options off the table when it comes to getting Richard Cordray in as director of the Consumer Finance Protection Board.
Rivera says agencies have been writing rules amid opposition.
The disputes, I think, have been narrowed over the last several months.
Opponents are targeting parts of Dodd-Frank, like derivatives regulation, and they've been grilling regulators on Capitol Hill. John Dugan, former comptroller of the currency, says agencies have missed deadlines, but
I think it is far less about the hearings and congressional oversight slowing things down and more just the nature of the beast.
A law that's hundreds of pages long that requires regulators to write dozens of new rules. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And finally, if you're not sure what to get that special someone for the holidays, try saying it with food. Restaurant gift cards are proving to be a popular pick this season. They have been ever since the economic meltdown in 2008. The most popular cards are for Subway, McDonald's, and the Olive Garden. Unlimited breadsticks, the gift that really keeps on giving. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.